What you described is one of the model that creates some of the structural barriers that exist in America.
Okay, sure.
And that's the perspective of those that have, those that own are the arbiters of innovation.
Yeah.
In reality, the best model is to turn that on its head so that you look at every person you have in your organization as a potential innovation factor. Someone with unique life experiences that aren't replicated everywhere else.
Yeah.
Someone with a unique life journey. Someone who understands your business from their perspective and positions them to contribute their ideas from a unique perspective. So instead of being kind of top down, most effectively it would be bottom up. All the 1 to 500 employees contributing ideas so that management can look at those and see which of those might best move forward in creating value.
This is the Business Philosopher with a New Podcast. I'm your host, Bhavesh Naik. One of the threads we explore on this podcast is how to build a scalable business that can outlive its founders, creators, and leaders. An important strategy in building such a business is to have a business operating system that is built around a self-empowered group of people who can carry it out, what I call an executable business philosophy. But if we build such a business, what aspects of it are considered intellectual property and can they be legally protected? To explore this question, I have a very special guest for you today. As the founder of TIL, Technology Innovation Law LLC, Christopher Bennett has pioneered a social impact law venture revolutionizing access to intellectual property rights, or IPR, for the underrepresented. His design delivers IPR as a digital service and as a digital software product, enhancing accessibility and affordability, crucial for fostering innovation and economic growth. Chris's approach integrates technology and innovation law to build sustainable business models with an eye on social equity. His unique blend of legal expertise, business acumen, and technological insight positions him as a visionary force tirelessly working towards a more equitable and inclusive future for us all. I'm pleased to have you on this podcast, Chris.
Bhavesh, thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you for sharing the message that's on our website, which we invite anyone to come and see after this event.
Sure. My pleasure.
You talk about underrepresented. Who are the underrepresented, and what's the implication of their underrepresentation? To them, of course, but also to the rest of us.
Understood. An outstanding preliminary question. First, underrepresented is situational because it depends on how you look at it. We're looking at it from the perspective of structural barriers to innovation in the United States primarily, and also around the world. While what we do is available to all, we invest our resources in reaching out to a population that, based on our last research data, was 95% people of color, 60% were women, 50% were small business startups, 25% creative, 25% social impact. The economics of it range from people who are living in public housing to those who are arguably middle class. And from an age perspective, as young as age 7, or as mature as we can guess, because we didn't ask, age 67.
Sure.
So that's one data-driven explanation of underrepresented. But as I said, what we do is available to all because there are opportunities to improve the overall United States gross domestic product that require you to be able to reach the audience that is the United States and the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And is there any data that you have or any insight that you have in terms of what is the impact of their underrepresentation on the country, on the economy of this country, but also worldwide?
Direct answer is yes. And I'll approach it in 3 points.
Yeah.
The first is if you can support this audience, reach out to those demographically underrepresented, as I described.
Sure.
It could grow the United States gross domestic product by about $1 trillion a year.
Wow.
And that's on an economy that's roughly a $20 trillion economy.
Right.
And to put that in perspective for the audience, that's a 5% increase.
Sure.
But when you think about it, U.S. is about 20% of overall global gross domestic product.
Yeah.
And the follow-on to that is we've identified comparable opportunities in other countries around the world. So even beyond the United States, the potential exists.
Sure.
The second impact is more individual and personal. Mm-hmm. And it's exemplified by a story that I have. I have an uncle in my family who's reported to have written a hit song in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been worth $1 million to him.
Wow. Uh-huh.
He did not understand intellectual property rights. He was a child of two farmers in South Carolina. The result was he no royalties for my uncle, no generational wealth to pass down. So that's a negative multiplier effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the final data point is what we do supports the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals in 2030, specifically economic opportunities like employment, reduced inequalities, innovation, and partnerships. We set a mission that by 2030, we wanted to have supported 2.7 million underrepresented entrepreneurs in creating $5.4 billion of their own value.
Sure.
Our last data sample, we had supported over 100 entrepreneurs in creating $43 million of their own financial value.
Sure.
So when we extrapolate that, that says to us, our mission is possible.
Mm-hmm.
At an individual level. And that individual achievement contributes to an overall U.S. and global growth. So it's a win-win-win opportunity. Quantitatively and qualitatively, we can succeed. Three wins.
Okay.
Three wins, yes.
Yes. So you said support, right? Support this community and these folks, this audience. In what way do you support them? With products, services, solutions? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Platform, mm-hmm. Or something else?
Excellent question. I think it starts to move us toward your thesis of business operating system. We did research that was funded by the National Science Foundation in a program that was administered by George Washington University.
Sure.
And to summarize our learning, we call it the four A's.
Mm-hmm.
The first is awareness, because to quote one of our clients, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So once you make them aware of intellectual property, that puts them in a position to match it to their own unique life experiences and journey.
Sure.
And it puts them in a position of being a potential innovation factory.
Sure.
The second A is access.
So if I can stop you,
sure.
My apologies. So okay. Awareness. So mm-hmm. What you probably mean, I'm assuming if you mean, mm-hmm. is there's an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Between one employee to, and I see small business as one to about 500 employee companies.
Okay.
And that segment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the definition, I think the American definition of a small business. Now, awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and I work with entrepreneurs a lot and business owners in this midsection quite a bit. And one of the things that the mindset is intellectual property, you know, beyond the brand, beyond some of the product, maybe filing a trademark, some copyright awareness, they're not aware of what can be protected and what cannot be protected. Is that what you mean, or is there a little bit more mm-hmm. to it than that?
It's a yes plus.
Okay.
So what you described is one of the model that creates some of the structural barriers that exist in America.
Okay, sure.
And that's the perspective of those that have. Those that own are the arbiters of innovation.
Yeah.
In reality, the best model is to turn that on its head so that mm-hmm. you look at every person you have in your organization as a potential innovation factory. Someone
sure.
with unique life experiences that aren't replicated everywhere else.
Yeah.
Someone mm-hmm. with a unique life journey. Someone who understands your business from their perspective
mm-hmm.
and positions them to contribute their ideas from a unique perspective. So instead of being kind of top down, most effectively it would be bottom up. All the 1 to 500 employees contributing ideas so that management can look at those and see which of those might best move forward in creating value for their
sure.
particular business.
Yeah, yeah. As they say, perspective is a superpower. Who mm-hmm. you are, who you mm-hmm. are with all of your warts and all mm-hmm. your history and the entire story. What you bring to this planet
mm-hmm.
in all its glory is mm-hmm. is your superpower. And
yes.
be that, right? So I love that. My apologies if you would continue on. So your first A is awareness.
Awareness. The second A is access.
Okay.
And that means access to an option that meets people where they are. just to amplify that, based on our data, Generation Z, for example, would prefer to try things themselves in general rather than pay someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they can't do it yourself, then they may consider paying someone. So,
sure.
So there's access and being able to do it yourself. There's access for a number of people in the market segments don't want to pay an attorney or a traditional legal services provider.
Sure.
They want to do it partially themselves to reduce their cost, but also to maintain their ownership and control, and then maybe pay for a little help.
Sure.
And the third access option we're seeing are folks who say, I want to give it to someone else. I'll tell them what I want, but I'll pay them and I'm willing to pay the price. So access is key because that starts to get the people where they are in economically as well as geographically. That's the second A. Third A is affordability.
Mm-hmm.
That's typically a tough one because our research showed that many of the population might be considered underrepresented didn't really understand intellectual property rights. So, and then they said, when you get it, it's not really helpful and it costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We built our digital service design to be 50% of the market comparable prices for services. And we've taken that and we're using that in our digital product software design to make it even more scalable and affordable. And we've come up with packages, options that meet budgets where they are. So there's something affordable for any budget.
Sure.
The last option, and this is strategically key, is the availability of a potential return on investment in their terms.
Right.
And just to give you some polar data points on that, we have one client for whom we cut a copyright in 5 languages because they wanted to donate a unique teaching method to refugee kids in Greece and in Turkey.
Sure.
On the other end of that spectrum, we have a client who started working with us to get licenses to enter a new market. And after a few years, they brought us back in to help them sell their organization for $40 million.
Okay. So wow.
Those are two spectrum ends of what's the availability of return on investment in that particular individual or organization's terms.
Sure. But
those are the four A's: awareness, access, affordability, and the availability of a potential return on investment in their terms.
That's great. So coming to the business operating system, I tend to call it the business philosophy that is executable or executable business philosophy. By the way, I wonder often if that's intellectual, it's trademarkable or not, executable business philosophy. But we'll talk about that some other time. Mm-hmm. So executable business philosophy. So a business operating system, basically, is the idea there is that it's Subway, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have a set of steps you do or take. You have 1, 2, 3, ABC, XYZ. And what you're buying is that system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm franchising my business and as a creator of the business. And then I would basically sell it to someone and they buy it from me. So that's a value. So there is obviously a value in the business operating system. And I see the reason why I call it a business philosophy or executable business philosophy is that there is the people aspect. Now, one of the things that we've done, I think, in my perspective, is that we've taken the people out of the systems, which is, and I think you and I are on the similar wavelength on that, that's not good. It's not right or wrong. It's not nothing moral. It's not a moral argument. It's just that it's not good business because we're underutilizing the people that we have, their capacity and their capability and their passion and their talent and their gifts and all of those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a executable business philosophy / business operating system that a business has that doesn't want to franchise themselves, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a software development company or an internet startup or a construction company or a professional services firm, any of these businesses, right? But they have, if they want to scale beyond themselves, you know, you have one guy, one gal, or a team of few number of people, 3 or 4 people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The business depends on them. If they want to scale beyond themselves, they have to build something that allows them to step away, not forever, but just kind of step away in terms of not being hands-on so that the business continue to grow and scale so that they don't become a bottleneck to the growth of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So people build business systems like that. My question to you is there any aspect of this that is protectable or not? And it's a broad question, so I can make it more specific. I can give you some more example, but I just want to take, you know, just see what your take on that is.
Sure. And Bhavesh, I'll respond as is, and I need to caveat, this is not legal advice.
Okay.
What I'm going to share is an observation, best practice, and some product of experience.
I understand.
And I think the short answer is possibly. Yeah. There's a method of patent called business method.
Okay.
And it's something, in fact, we actually have a provisional patent in which will involve that.
Right.
But there's a way that could be patented in a unique business method that is novel, it's non-obvious, it's useful, and you want to publish it and get your 20-year monopoly. So potentially it could. Having said that, what we've seen that might even be more powerful is a layering approach. And Apple Computer is outstanding at this. They will take something like patent, which is unique, as I mentioned. They'll overlay it with trade secret. And you may say, well, why would they want to do that? Well, patents have a 20-year monopoly life. Trade secrets can go on forever. Ask Coca-Cola and Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Which are specifically based on trade secrets.
Sure.
As long as you do the work required to reasonably keep it a secret.
Sure.
And then they'll overlay that with copyrights because computer software code can be copyright protected.
Sure. Yeah.
They may then add design patents because of the unique look and feel of their devices. And, of course, they wrap all that in a nice bow called the Apple brand.
Sure.
So there are options on how you might want to protect that business operating system. You may want to just protect the core elements itself with the right approach, or you may want to wrap around it layers that may give it additional flexibility.
So sure.
It is quite possible what you asked.
That's great. So to summarize, so three layers are, the first is trademark. The first is trade secret. So the first one is trade secret, like Coca-Cola and their secret formula that no one knows about. The second one is the trademark, and then on top of that, you have copyright.
That's close. And in fact, the cool part is the layering approach that Apple uses involves all four traditional forms of intellectual property.
Sure.
The first dimension is patent.
You said it was patent. Okay, I forgot.
That's correct. That's correct. There is a business method patent.
Sure.
You look at organizations like Priceline.com or Amazon, for example. They have some of those pieces.
Sure.
And then you may want to add trade secret as a layer. The difference is trade secrets need to be kept a secret, which is non-disclosure, but they don't have a life. They don't have an end life. They can go on forever if you do the work.
Yeah.
Versus patent is 20 years. A third possibility is copyright.
Okay.
Copyright only covers something called creative expression, but in Apple's case, it can cover computer software code.
Sure.
So that's an option. And then the last one is, if you really want to use this in scale and you want to create a brand that has value, then you might want to use trademark as well. So people will know with whom they're doing business because they'll see that, and then they'll associate all those other benefits with that particular brand or trademark.
Coming back to the business that is a few hundred employee companies, on average, let's say, you know, 2 employees, 5 employees to 350, 400 employee, 500 employee companies. So these folks, if they choose to go through this process, what's the payoff? Now, you talked about this a little bit. Do you have some more examples, some ideas of what are the benefits of protecting your intellectual property, especially in terms of building out your systems and processes?
I think there are different ways to look at it, but I would call it a Texas three-step.
Sure.
The first step, and we talked about a founder,
right.
And let's build on the operating system idea. With the computer, you physically turn the device on.
Right.
And then it sends instructions out to the different components of the computer to tell it how to start, how to interact, and how to execute what you tell it to do.
Right.
So one of the aspects of it is, how does the founder actually create their values, their mission, their strategy, and be able to send it out to the organization, just like the operating system sends it to the computer.
Right.
So intellectual property is one way to do that. It could be done through trade secrets. It may be done through things that aren't protected by intellectual property rights.
Sure.
It may be values. It may be policies.
Yeah.
But that's that first step.
Sure.
So the second step then is, once you have that, it makes it easier for the founder to do one of the toughest things I think probably you and I are aware of, and that's how do you multiply your value when you can't clone yourself?
Yes.
Which means you need to transmit that knowledge and you need to transmit those values to other people.
Sure.
And to trust that they will absorb it and execute it well enough to continue the organization toward its mission.
Yeah, you hit it on the head. Yeah.
And that's difficult to do, and it's also an iterative process.
Right.
So if you can have it both in intellectual property rights, which are protected by law, which make it unique to your organization, something they own, and then also provide it as human values, that creates a synergy that makes it easier to replicate and pass on to new employees, to others. For example, I worked for MCI for a while. We call ourselves MCIers. It was known to be a very hectic organization, very rapid pace.
Right.
And but they say if you could stay there 5 years, you could do that because you knew how to adapt. You had those characteristics. So that's the second piece.
Right.
And the third piece is potentially one of the most important if you're a for-profit entity. And that is creating knowledge that will increase earnings per share and stock market value or value of the organization, the enterprise.
Sure.
And we've had the pleasure of working with clients who've sold their companies, and I've also had the pleasure professionally of working with organizations that have done mergers and acquisition. Investors and potential deal partners will look at those things. They want to see your intellectual property. They want to know if they buy your company that you own the brand, it's registered, and they're getting the brand. They want to know that they're getting your copyrights that are protected for your code, your patents, your trade secrets. So that creates a tangible value.
Sure.
It makes a difference. So individual as a starter, replicating and passing their values and information to the mission, to the organization, and then having that manifest in value for potential stakeholders and investors. Those are the three pieces that I think really make intellectual property rights something that an individual as a solo entrepreneur or a 500-person organization can and should consider.
Sure, sure. I'm assuming that the way to get started, if you haven't done this at all, is to start writing this down, right? So start writing down your procedures and processes. And you talked about values. I would, if I may, I would add two more things to it, vision and mission. So the idea there is that this is what we do. This is what we, who we do it for. And this is why we do it. And this is our vision. And that basically brings together everything else, and that becomes the thread that runs through all your systems and processes. And so then that together becomes your executable business philosophy.
I think that's right, but I want to build on that by distinguishing, and this is why intellectual property rights matters, distinguishing what would be considered common sense, traditional, not novel, not non-obvious. Those are considered just be a part of day-to-day business.
Sure.
So those things you may communicate that are not proprietary. And that is a foundation point.
Right.
The individual, the corporate values, those are foundation points.
Right.
But the intellectual property are the things that will arise from that.
Right.
And that's why people matter. Because, you know, we have generative artificial intelligence today, which can take different information and data sources and merge it, mash it, and create something that arguably is unique. At this point, none of the forms of intellectual property in the United States recognize generative AI as an author. So it can't create on its own.
Right. Right.
Patents, copyrights. It can help you create trademarks and trade secrets.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the person or the organization will own that.
Yeah.
What we're getting at to the point is the people are the key innovation arbiters. And I think that wise organizations will want to build on that and leverage it and harness the technology to help those people create value.
I love you for making that argument, Chris, because that's the argument I've been making. And I'm more intuitive about it, that it's the people that matters, and the people are going to matter. Their perspective, their knowledge, their wisdom, what they bring to the table is going to matter more in the age of AI than ever before. And the more powerful the AI becomes, because it's going to become a common knowledge, general knowledge, but people, the uniqueness comes from our people. even today, you know, Google is trying to, Google is starting to basically go after blogs and content that's being created using AI and deranking them or not ranking them as high as the original content that cannot be written by AI. So it's implicitly being, you know, validated, this idea that it's the people that that bring the value to the organization. And and now what you're saying also, which I love, is that that is the part that can be protected legally, not the part that is created by the machine. Can you confirm that?
And the short answer is, depending on the form of intellectual property rights, that's correct. So there's precedent on the books, for example, for copyrights, where the copyright office has said that creative expression, which is what copyright covers, and there are about 16 different types, has to have the requisite amount of person, of individual human contribution in order to achieve the copyright. Similarly, in patents in the United States, the USPTO has found that you need to have the inventor, and the inventor can't just be AI. AI can help. But it's got to be a human or a corporation that owns that. And so I think there are places where different forms of generative AI can really enhance value and scale. And let's be real for a minute. As these tools get better and smarter, more productive, our capitalist system is going to try to use them wherever they can that it creates shareholder value or individual wealth. But I don't think for the foreseeable future they will be able to replicate the human experience. And until they can go through from womb to tomb, we are in a unique position to make AI and other types of technology tools things that help us to make life better instead of things that suppress our life.
Thank you for that conversation. That's awesome. So switching gears a little bit, if I am, let's say I'm a business owner, founder. I have about 50 employee companies. Growth is crazy. Things are great. Revenues are flowing. There is profit, or maybe I'm funded. Either one of those are okay right now, right? In today's day and age, there's a lot of venture capital. And people are happy. Everything is going wonderful. And I'm a busy guy, right? So where do I start with the process of thinking about taking the processes that I have, the values, as you put it, the business philosophy, as I call it, where do I begin the process of trying to basically say, this is my intellectual property and it's unique to me, it's unique to us, to my organization? What's the first step that you would recommend we take?
Well, we have a model that we developed internally called TIPAS, which is for technology innovation protection for assets and systems. And we have other acronyms, but the bottom line is, step back for a minute and just think about, what is it that you want to do? So begin with the end in mind. If you're the founder, or if you, you know, do you want to go public? What is it that you want to do? And then you start to do an inventory of your innovation. And as I said, there are four traditional forms of intellectual property: copyrights, trademarks, trade secrets, and patents. But there are emerging forms of intellectual property that are driven by some of the unique technologies like blockchain. So think about what you want to do. Look at innovation writ large. So not as if I came up with this unique idea and I want to patent it. Look at it as, what are the resources that can contribute to and create innovation as I'm on this journey to my ultimate goal? And then, as soon as you can, start to capture that, to document it.
Could you repeat that that one sentence right before you said start documenting?
So you're looking at, as you're on this journey to whatever it is your aspiration, look at the elements, the touch points, the people, the resources that you're going to encounter as you move forward. And start to think about how they can help you create, or how we'll be able to create, intellectual property rights. And some of that will start with your ideas for the organization. You might come up with a unique design, maybe a logo. You may have written some software code. You want to build a company around an app. That software code could likely be copyrighted protected. The logo could likely be a trademark.
Sure.
You may have some unique way that you do something that you love to do and you want to be able to offer that.
Mm-hmm.
And you may only tell your friends about that.
Right.
That could be a trade secret. So, for example, I had a client that was a government contractor. Larger organization purchased his business for 7 figures. And he said, he asked him, why did you do that? He said, oh, we heard you had this unique way of doing something. We wanted to buy it. That was a trade secret. And then, you know, last but not least, you may come into an opportunity where you have a true invention that's novel, non-obvious, useful. You're willing to publish it to get that 20-year monopoly.
Sure.
And so you want to put that in the marketplace. But I would say that one of the most powerful ideas would be bring people on board with the sense that this will be an innovation organization pursuing whatever it is your goal.
Yeah.
Make sure they're aware. Take yes. those 4 A's that we identify.
Yeah.
If you can do that from the beginning, it is quite likely you will have a robust portfolio of intellectual property rights early on and as your business pursues its journey.
Yeah.
And if you build success, those intellectual property rights will probably appreciate in value.
I love the idea of making this a part of the recruitment process right from the mm-hmm. start. When you bring the people in, it's mm-hmm. a part of the conversation and it's a mm-hmm. part of the culture of the organization. You begin to build that into the culture of the organization, basically, right?
That's correct, Vivesh. And I think what it opens the door to is more inclusion.
Yes.
Because you're emphasizing to folks that I know you've had a unique life journey.
Right.
There's no one else like you in that journey.
Yeah.
So that may be, give you something special to bring to the table that no one else can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then we don't have to make DEI an after effect or after the fact or after thought. That has to be imposed onto the culture for an organization. DEI, diversity, mm-hmm. inclusiveness.
Yes. Equity, inclusion.
Right. So, and that's built into the culture of the organization, right?
It's good for business in addition to being good for society overall. So why not do it?
Why not do it?
That's my view.
Yes. And I agree 100%. Yes. Why would you not do it this way, right? Something about your organization, if you can tell us a little bit about, you talked a little bit about in the beginning of our segment, of our episode, you talked about the, it seems like you have an algorithm type of a thing,
mm-hmm.
which you lend to someone who wants to write a software off of it. Is that what you have in terms of what you've done to make this knowledge that you have, the services that you offer, kind of make it more mm-hmm. accessible to the folks that you make accessible to?
And I think the appropriate way to answer that is smile. Say, there is a secret sauce element to what
okay.
we do.
Okay.
We do have trade secrets.
Okay.
But the way we've approached it is we've bundled them.
Yes.
So we can take the value of the trade secrets and share it with our clients, with our allies and others.
Okay.
So they can benefit from that, from the capital and the energy and the time we've put in, the 5 years of research and
yes.
our knowledge.
Yeah.
But also we want to keep the value because we want to share it and we want the same win-win-win that I talked about.
Yes.
We want to replicate that. So you know, we're approaching an audience that most traditional legal service providers can't serve profitably. So we've invested the capital to build a bridge to that audience
sure.
so that they can use that. We've made it affordable to the audience
mm-hmm.
so that whatever budget they can use that. And then we're working to support innovations that can make the world a better place through supporting the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Sure.
So we have that same triple win aspiration. And a lot of it relies on our unique design, our unique intellectual property. And you know, at the right time, in the right situation, we would open that up and share it to folks, or we would give it away, or we would have investors invest in it so we could leverage it.
Sure. So with your business, you're also an entrepreneur, just like you're an advisor in terms of the intellectual property development and intellectual property protection. What is, I'm fascinated with your journey as to how you mm-hmm. got here. How do you see the future for your company mm-hmm. and yourself right now and the world, mm-hmm. basically? Where do you think we're going right now? This is a difficult question, and I won't hold you to it. 5 years down the line, if you're wrong, mm-hmm. That's okay, right? We all make predictions. But where do you think we're headed with this? We seem to be in so much flux in terms of intellectual mm-hmm. property. It seems like this AI is sort of like, in terms of IP, it's sort of like a monkey wrench that's been thrown into this. But I think we address some of that it's not mm-hmm. as big of an issue as it is. You know, the fundamentals still apply, you know, people mm-hmm. and all that. They're more important now. So, but I want to get your take on that. Where are we going, you think, right now with intellectual property and AI mm-hmm. and where the world is moving right now?
That is an interesting and it's a challenging question. But I'm going to take a shot at it with the caveat that I don't read minds and I don't have a crystal ball. And I will do it from a top-down perspective.
Sure.
I think at the top, similar to other technological advancements, you know, artificial intelligence is one of those technologies that will be transformative for some sooner and less than others. But eventually it will touch everyone, similar to the steam engine, you know, similar to the internet, yes. things of that nature.
Yeah,
I think it comes with those same challenges, though, because as you've seen from vehicles and they have accidents to the internet and some of the things that go on.
Yeah.
There'll be negatives, there'll be positives.
Yes.
But in the mainstream, there's some progress.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest challenge for society is at the government level, at the private sector level, at the societal level and the individual level, we need to come to grips with how do we take this and make sure we get the best we can out of it.
Sure.
And that's going to be a bit of a journey and a struggle.
Yeah.
So sure. I would describe it as a fluid environment.
Mm-hmm.
Is my relative from the military would be.
Sure.
And that kind of brings it down to then, what does that mean for TIL? I've expressed that our mission is a social enterprise impact mission. We're a law firm that does social impact IP. And this year we launched the legal tech side, this taking sure. the law firm's knowledge and turning it into software.
Sure.
So they're going to be pursuing those missions, whether I'm with them or not, to make it easier and less costly for entrepreneurs and creators from historically underserved and underrepresented communities to protect and monetize their innovation. And they do that because we believe success there helps the overall economy. So that's a part of a win. And that kind of gets down to my role. I've been working on this for a while, and I intend to continue to pursue it till its ultimate fruition. But I'm also working with folks that are, in some cases, volunteers, some are interns,
sure.
some are contractors,
yeah.
some are equity owners. And looking at, if something happened to me, if I got hit by a bus today, do I think we have people in place that could step in and take roles that would lead to continue to pursue the mission? And I actually think we do. I think we're blessed and fortunate enough to have those folks, if they chose to do so, that can continue the organization's mission. So for me, my job is to get the resources, work the team, collaborate with them, co-create, and execute. And so that's what's driving me. So from the top down of all this fluid environment, to continue to pursue our mission as a law and legal tech entity, to having the team and people that can continue this if I'm not able to do so. Those are the things that are really occupying what I'm doing at this time. And that's where I think it's going. I think eventually there'll be some kind of positive benefit, but it's up to the individuals to do their part.
Yes.
To make it happen.
Yes. I think one of the positives is that it is going to make this knowledge, including the intellectual property knowledge, mm-hmm. all the things that we talked about and things along those lines, more accessible to people, because now you mm-hmm. can look it up. And go to ChatGPT and type it up. And so that knowledge, but then it has to be used by the people. And then all the things that you talked about, the four A's, all of those things come together. So, and those are important. So thank you for sharing those. One of the things I like to kind of get into a little bit is, Chris, I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs. And one theme that I hear a lot is that it's not always moonlight and roses. The entrepreneurial journey is not always easy. So was mm-hmm. there ever a dark night of the soul kind of moment in your entrepreneurial journey where you thought that, my God, this is done. You know, I need to step away from it. I'm going to just throw in the towel. I'm done. or something like that. So it doesn't have to be that dire. But have you ever been in a situation where you thought that there was a difficult moment for you personally?
Direct answer is yes. In fact, so I would say that's kind of been a friend of mine throughout life.
Yeah.
I'm from pretty humble beginnings. One of the projects, Double Oaks in Charlotte, North Carolina, to then single mom. But what I took from my mom, who I think was strong enough to be 1.5 parents. Mm-hmm. And then I had a lot of uncles who filled in that gap to make two.
Sure.
Was resilience, and also to remember that it's not where you start, it's where you finish.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes when I've encountered issues, and we encounter them daily at TIL because we're a bootstrap show.
Sure.
But when I encounter those issues, again, I think about the ultimate goal. I work backwards to where are we now? What can we do to continue? Where's the resilience in that? And does it make sense to continue?
Mm-hmm.
And perpetually the answer has been yes. So we do what we can to find a way to continue to move things forward.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense would be, that's not just me. That's most entrepreneurs who aren't born with someone who can drop, you know, whatever seed capital they need to fully fund their model.
Right.
And not just entrepreneurs, because of the way technology and the world is working, it's so fluid. That's actually an individual thing, right?
Absolutely.
Now. So some of those kind of stressors are going to folks throughout the world.
Yeah.
And so I think we benefit from conversation, and we benefit from sharing, and then letting everyone know that we're all citizens of the world. And, you know, whether or not we like it, we're on the same ship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we should be working together and trying to get the best results.
Sure. Sure. Well, there is an author that I love. His name is Joseph Campbell. I don't know if you've heard of him. He wrote, he came up with this sort of pattern of telling a story. He didn't come up mm-hmm. with it. He just kind of encapsulated it. You know, he kind of noticed and observed it and said, this is the formula of the way the stories are told. And he calls it the hero's journey. I'm sure you've heard of it. So the idea there is that we are the you know, all novels, all movies, you know, whether it's Harry Potter or Godfather or children's books, they all kind of start like that. You know, we're in a comfort zone. But then something is bothering us. And then we go on sort of like a journey to fix that problem, mm-hmm. to make our life mm-hmm. better in some way. And the invitation comes. Sometimes we deny it. We say, no, I don't want to do that. I'm comfortable. I'm okay. But then you kind of take the bait and you go for it anyway. You go on this journey. So sometimes it's an external journey, like in Harry Potter, for example, right? He goes to this sure. college called Hogwarts. But it is, as you take that external journey, it's also a metaphor for an internal journey, internal exploration. Mm-hmm. It's a journey mm-hmm. of finding out who you truly, deeply are, at what's your essence. Mm-hmm. And I find that very fascinating that people go on this journey, and that's what life is all about, that you dig deep inside yourself and you find something about you that you didn't have. Now, entrepreneurial journey is like that. It has lots of challenges, and it's a perfect example to go on this journey. So my question for you, Chris, is have you figured out something about yourself today that you didn't know about yourself, let's say 20 years ago, or you can go all the way back to your childhood? What do you know about yourself today? Probably because of this entrepreneurial journey that you're on, that you mm-hmm. didn't know that you had or you were?
Interesting question. And I think two points are relevant. One is I believe in self-actualization.
Sure.
And so I define that as being the best that I can be mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Sure.
And by definition, that's a moving target.
Yes.
You know, we as people ourselves swap ourselves. I think we actually replicate ourselves about every 2 years in total.
Yeah.
So we're constantly changing as individuals, humanly, from a biological perspective.
Sure.
And that same thing is happening to us from a mental, physical, emotional, often spiritual.
Yeah.
And then the world around us is moving as well.
Sure.
So it's constantly for me a quest to be the best that I can be. And that requires reflection to say, do I think I'm my best now? Did I make my best decision then? And then it requires consideration of analysis, adjustment, if that's appropriate, and then execute.
Sure.
So I think that's something that I've taken to heart and own. And to go to your point about the the hero's journey, the individual journey. I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity, which is the same fraternity that Thurgood Marshall and Martin Luther King.
Sure.
And there's a poem called Invictus,
yes,
which was in fact also a movie.
I saw that
about
movie.
The South African rugby team. Yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it adequately captures well a perspective that we bring to the table, at least I bring to the table,
sure,
my responsibility to be my best so I can contribute my best to the world.
Sure, sure. And that's something that you discovered on your way, or that was sort of bred into you as you from your family background?
I think explicitly with our background, no one explicitly said that because I was the first person to go to graduate from college,
sure,
in our family.
Sure.
So that didn't explicitly come out, but where it did come out was I watched the work ethic,
yes,
of my mother and my uncles and our family. I watched the fact that 8 of them had military service.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't say that, but you could see how,
yes,
they were hit with situations and they persevered, moved forward. And so I acquired the language to describe it as self-actualization later.
Yeah.
Sure. And then also acquire the perspective to say that's something I need to pay attention to every day. And as I make major life decisions and trying to be the best that I can be,
sure,
and give my best.
Absolutely. One of the last questions is, if there was someone who comes to you for advice and say, hey, I want to build a business,
mm-hmm,
and they look up to you and they want some advice, some words of wisdom from you, what would be one or two things that you tell them?
Interesting question. I think the first thing would be begin with the end in mind.
Sure.
So, and then the second thing would be prepared to adapt and change and to make assessments of whether or not that end is still the right thing for you.
Okay.
I think those two together usually cover many situations that they're going to encounter. And then the rest is really going to be up to what's in them to try to achieve their goal.
Sure. Absolutely. So if someone wants to get hold of you, Chris, they want to connect with you in some way, what's the best way for them to contact you?
I would say three means are probably easiest.
Sure.
One is on LinkedIn. I am there. I'm Christopher Benn. I think if they search, they'll find me associated with TIL.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be happy to send that information to you after this discussion.
Sure. We'll put that in the show notes. Yeah.
Second is go to the websites of our organizations, either to our law firm website, technology-innovation-law.com, or to our legal tech website, which is t-i-l-group.com. And you'll see my contact information there. You can reach me. And then third is you can get the email. Send
sure.
an email to me.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. I learned a lot from you, and thank you.
Thank you.
This was a great conversation. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time, and we finally did it. So here we are, and maybe we'll do more, because there is this is a moving world, a very fast-moving world, and there is a lot that we can still talk about that we haven't talked about today. So I'm looking forward to staying in touch with you and doing more of these kinds of things.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And you know, don't hesitate to let us know what we can do to support your aspirations. You're doing meaningful things in the world.
Okay. Thank you very much. Likewise.